Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. We are a community of practitioners focused on helping your clients achieve meaningful and socially significant behavior change. This is your host, Matt Harrington.
Hello, and welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Matt. Let's roll right into it. Today we're going to be going over Bailey and colleagues in 2023, talking about the article Supervision for Aspiring Behavior Analysts in Australia, an exploration of current practices, challenges, and opportunities. So let's do it. Let's talk about supervision, but from a slightly different angle, of course, from Australia. Now, this makes me remember the article that we did a couple weeks back on the way that ABA has been adopted in the US versus the East and mainland China. That was a really interesting article. When I first glanced at it, I thought it was a waste of time. I don't mean the article itself was a waste of time, but in terms of practical usage for me and you, I thought that was a little bit of a waste of time. But I was wrong, and I'm glad that I ended up reading it and podcasting about it, because it ended up having some really interesting pullaways for not only cultural responsiveness, but also just in general, what we can do in the West to better disseminate ABA based on what they're experiencing. And this is what I'm seeing in this article as well. This struggle that they're having in Australia in terms of supervision is able to be studied very closely because it's at a smaller scale. I think the last numbers in North America that I saw for BCBAs is something like 40 to 50,000, right? It's a huge number of BCBAs. Whereas in Australia, we'll talk about this in a second, there's only 139. At the time this article was written, that is just such a smaller scale. You can do things like get quotes from people, like actually know the people that you're surveying and deal with this problem on a smaller scale. And then if there's success, we in America can take that research and the information that they were able to glean for us and apply those same solutions to the barriers that we're experiencing as well. So it's a little bit of a give and take. We want to be able to provide that constant research and resources in terms of a vast overall expansive ABA that they can pick up on, and then we want to learn from them to solve some of our problems here. So where did this really all start? If you remember, but in 2019, the BACB came out with a big announcement. The Behavior Analysis Certification Board said that they were going to pause all applications and acceptances and certifying for anybody outside of North America. This was a really big deal because at this point, the BACB was the certifying body for any behavior analyst in the world. This made a lot of people frustrated, and at this point, I don't know if it was before this or at this point, the International Behavior Analyst, the IBA, also came into play as another certifying body for behavior analysts. However, Australia took a different approach than approaching the IBA and instead went back to the BACB. A big reason why the BACB made this change was simply because of resources. They didn't have the resources to translate the exams and things like that into every single language. They needed a little bit of consistency. And Australia said, hey, we speak English. Let's be on the same team. Let's keep certifying our participants in Australia, even though we're not actually in North America. And at that point, Australia was granted exception to this rule. Now, I made that sound very simple. I said, this is why the BACB did it, and this is why they didn't. I'm sure there was a lot more that went behind that process that you and I may not ever know about, but that was my general understanding of it at the time, and that's what the authors supported as well here. Anyways, we have this situation in Australia where they're on their own island, but under the BACB certification. That means that all of the BACB requirements for continuing education and supervision and certification all are requirements for Australia as well. In a study done in 2020 by Leaf, research noted that out of the supervisors, only 31% of them actually had BCBA credentials. And a lot of them cited a huge reason for the lack of accessing that BCBA credential was a lack of supervision. To become a behavior analyst, a BCBA, you have to get either 1,500 concentrated hours or 2,000 regular supervision hours. And this just wasn't accessible for the people studied or surveyed in 2020. Therefore, this supervision problem is perhaps the biggest challenge that ABA in Australia has right now, or rather, the BACB has in Australia right now. It's a self-repeating cycle. Less supervision creates less certificates, which create less supervision, and eventually the BACB certificate will die as people generally turn over, change jobs, get older, and things like that. You can't keep that cycle going without new people accepting more and more supervisors every single day, and for that to happen, you need supervisors to start training new certificates. This research paper attempted to further clarify the situation by doing a large scale of the behavior analysts in Australia right now who had the certain BCBA certificate. They wanted to identify BCBAs who delivered supervision and what their capacity was like to accept new supervisees. They wanted to identify how supervision is being delivered and ultimately identify barriers and suggest large scale solutions. This is a big play. This is the type of research that you really need to get these programs off the ground. You need research like this to support a need that then brings in money and funding and other things from outside sources to begin to grow the field in these new places. And I want to be clear, there is behavior analysis in Australia. What we're talking about here specifically is BCBA certificates. And all those certificates and future certificates who are trying to go through the BACB credential. The methods were simple. They sent out a survey, good old-fashioned survey. They have 149 certificates. I think I said 139 before. That's incorrect. This article, at the time it was written, found 149 certificates in Australia, 149 versus 50,000. And 39 responded to the study for about a 26% response rate. That's pretty damn good when it comes to response rate. I did a survey-based capstone project, and I sent it out to all of the BACB newsletter, and I got 100, 200 responses back out of 40,000. So my response rate was about 0.02. So 26%, I call that a major win for surveys. So let's chat about the results. Consider the three purposes of this study, and we'll go through them one by one. Now, the first was the capacity to accept more supervisees. Were the behavior analysts currently certified in Australia able to take on? Generally speaking, there was a positive trend in this direction. That meant that over the course of the next 2 to 3 years, more and more people were going to be able to take on more and more supervisees. This is overall a good thing. This is the cycle that needs to happen for ABA to continue to grow in Australia. They didn't go into a ton of detail, which I was bummed about because I think there was a lot more information that could have been gleaned in this area. But overall, we have a positive cycle going rather than a negative cycle. So that's definitely a win. The next question is, how is supervision being delivered in Australia? They couldn't really get into the quality of supervision, but we were able to look at things like was it online or via telesupervision? Was it group or individual? And overall, most supervisors were willing to do either telesupervision or in person. They liked their one-on-one to be in person, but were willing to do either. Most were willing to give supervision to anybody internal in their organization or external, but almost everyone preferred internal to the organization. Some even said they were worried about liability when providing external supervision, which potentially is a continuing education resource for them to have when you specifically talk about, okay, yes, there's liability, but here's how you get professional liability. This is how it works. This is how you can be protected to come to not squash, but get through that barrier as well. About 35% of supervision was paid, and the hourly rate was about 100 AUD, or about 65 USD, which is our American dollar. $5 an hour, I think it's pretty fair. I've seen some supervisors charge anywhere from 100 to 120 to 150. I think 65 is probably on the cheaper end, but I think anybody in the US would be okay paying that, or at least based on, they probably wouldn't like to pay that, but based on what I could get in the marketplace, I think that's pretty fair, if not a little cheap. And finally, the third question that this article looked to ask is, what are the barriers? So the first thing to talk about is the barriers for the supervisors. Lack of time was the primary barrier to accepting more supervisees and providing quality supervision. And this just makes sense. I don't think I've read a single study in which lack of time wasn't identified as a barrier to doing more things like reading research or providing supervision or providing feedback or caregiver training. It's always lack of time. And with only 149 certificates in Australia, it makes sense that lack of time is going to be the big issue. The other thing that people were worried about was the geographic access. It's hard to move through Australia just based on the different terrains and things like that. So if you're not going to be able to provide telesupervision, it's really hard to be able to provide one-on-one in-person supervision just based on the distance traveled. So about 27% of the participants reported that geographic barriers was a challenge as a supervisor. What about the barriers for the supervisees, the people who are receiving the supervision? These were also pretty interesting in lineup with what we see in the U.S. The first was the lack of available supervisors. 54% reported trouble just finding someone to supervise them. Once again, this makes total sense based on just the amount of certificates in Australia right now. That was the biggest barrier people had. The next one was a lack of networking opportunities, not a lot of conferences to meet and work with potential supervisors and make those like connections within the field that you need to start to grow and get mentorship, both formally and informally. Quick pause here for a second so I can tell you about something that's going to benefit you massively. You can probably tell that I read a lot of research just to produce this podcast and also just to keep my head above water in my clinical work. See, I'm always looking for the most efficient, quickest, and most practitioner yet also evidence-based way to solve the clinical challenges in front of me. However, as you know, quick and research don't always go hand in hand, and that's why I created the Solving Clinical Challenges with Research course to teach you an efficient 20 to 30 minute method to access, utilize, and identify research articles, as well as summarizing them so that you can have the best information possible to solve your clinical challenges. This 2CEU course is completely free for podcast listeners. Just go to behavioristbookclub.com/solving. behavioristbookclub.com/solving to get your free 2CEU course. Back to the podcast. Another 21% said that there was a lack of quality supervision. While they did have a supervisor, they didn't feel like what they were getting was really quality supervision, whether it be because the supervisor was showing up late or wasn't prepared or didn't have a strong conceptual understanding of the topic. They just weren't getting what they needed, even though technically they were getting their hours signed off on. And I want to zoom in on this one for a second, because this one in and of itself is scary. Right? This is hard as a behavior technician trying to get good supervision and you just aren't getting what you need. But it would be even worse if all of your other friends who are technicians who are looking to get supervision in this field didn't even have a supervisor, much less one without quality. And so you start to think, man, I don't think my supervisor is that great, but at least I'm getting my hours signed off on. And that's a really dangerous pattern where you're accepting subpar supervision just to get through supervision. That's dangerous. And that's what creates, honestly, a cycle of struggling behavior analysts to keep up with the needs and growing research of our field. A few things were suggested as clear solutions, one being just general networking and a registry for supervisors, more training for how supervision works and how you can access supervision on a more equitable basis via telehealth or paid or unpaid or things like that. And finally, universities actually placing and spending time helping their graduates acquire supervision rather than keeping it as a totally separate outside of university activity. We do see that sometimes here, and oftentimes the technicians that I've worked with, the people who are receiving supervision and need university placements, they typically see it as annoying. And this might be a hard pill to swallow, but I think when you have a surplus of supervision resources, the university placements really doesn't mean as much as you think it will. In contrast, however, when you don't have a surplus of supervision, you need those connections and that basically that first email introduction to get good supervision somewhere and get your foot in the door. So they're one of the main things the authors were suggesting were those university placements. What does that mean for us as behavior analysts? I'm in Florida. I'm assuming a lot of my listenership, just based on statistics, is in the US. What does that mean for us? Some of the barriers are very familiar. Not everywhere in ABA is there a bunch of behavior analysts ready to provide high-quality in-person supervision. A couple weeks ago, we looked at geographic access to behavior technicians in BCBAs, and I think that this echoes true, this research echoes true, for those in the rural areas where there's not a lot of behavior analysts. However, if you're in a highly concentrated area for behavior analysis like I am in Florida, I still think there's things to glean from this. While there might be plenty of supervisors, I would argue that still, even in the US, there might be a lack of high quality supervision. And maybe there's not a lack overall, but as a technician, one of the things that I was really worried about as I was collecting my hours was my supervision good enough and talking with other people, what their experience was like, and trying to hook onto their supervisors who they really liked. It became something where, yes, I had plenty of options, but to get really high quality supervision, I had to rely on some of these same solutions that they were coming up with in this research paper. So with all that being said, the need to find high quality supervision, the need to be able to find supervision in general, there's a couple things to leave you with in terms of what to consider when you're looking for supervision. The first thing you can do as a supervisor is really to define what quality supervision means for you. Reflect back on your own supervision experience and pull out the things that you liked and ditch the things you didn't like. Did your supervisor have you do an agenda for each meeting that you never ever looked at again? Don't make advisees do it. Did your supervisor make you take 150 practice tests before you started with him just so he could see what areas of the task list you were weak in? If the answer is yes, and you really liked that, then keep doing that. That was a personal example. My favorite supervisor, I had me do that, and guess what? It was awesome because it gave me a really honest and objective look at what I needed help on. Now, whenever I have a supervisee, that is the first thing that I have them do, is take a practice test so I can really see where they're at. It's also important to consider the role that payment has in all of this. There's an ethical factor and dual relationship stuff that goes on with this payment. And it was in one of the early, I think it was somewhere in the 80s episodes where I talked about payment for supervision. So go ahead and check that episode out for a really interesting article review talking about what payment for supervision can look like and the barriers and the boundaries of what ethical payment looks like. That's a really interesting one to consider, but be realistic. If you're a supervisor and you're going to charge for supervision, that's fine, but do it clearly, honestly, and do it up front. And if you're a supervisee and you're in the position of having to pay for supervision, look to see how you can make it accessible for you without breaking the bank. And finally, the last thing to consider is your grad program. In all the conversations we have about supervision, I rarely see people talking about matching their supervision to their graduate experience in the university and classroom setting. Be honest with yourself. How important is supervision to you passing the exam? A lot of that depends on how well your graduate program prepared you for. I felt like I was pretty prepared for my graduate program. Yeah, I was worried about the quality of my supervision on a practical and in actually being able to do the things I learned, but I didn't want to waste time studying the task list items with my supervisor. I wanted to be role-playing functional analyses and things like that. If that's not the case for you and you feel like your grad program didn't prepare you for the exam, talk to your supervisor about how you can start tailoring the practical things that you're learning as well as the more theoretical task list items as well. There's ways to pull all these things together, and your supervisor probably has a way to do it. You just have to ask. So if you're a supervisee, know yourself and know how well are you paying attention in that online course. If it's a lot and you're taking notes and you don't have a worry in the world about the exam coming up, go for it, learn all those practical skills, crush your supervision, and go on with your day. If you feel like you need a little bit more help, definitely take the time and talk to your supervisor. chances are they were in the same spot you were. That's all I got for you today. I hope you really enjoyed this episode, and I hope you enjoyed talking about supervision in a place that wasn't the US, in Australia. See you in the next one.
So there you have it. That's the end of our podcast. It would mean the world to me if you commented or shared, or however you're interacting with this content, subscribe if you're on a podcast platform. It means the world to me. And also, if you are available, give a review to this podcast. Give it 5 stars if you love it. Give me feedback if not. I read every single one, and it does a ton to boost the visibility of content like this in the overall algorithm. If you want to continue engaging with the Behaviorist Book Club, the best place to go is the ABA Cafe Facebook group. You can find it just by typing in the ABA Cafe into your Facebook search bar. It is a group of research-minded practitioners engaging and collaborating together to become better behavior analysts through our application of practitioner-focused research. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.